Darling.
Darling.
It's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society outside of a kennel.
Did she say that?
Welcome to the Clatch.
Hello. We're glad you're here. Hi, Clatch Packers. We're clatching today. Hi.
On KVSHLP Vashon.
101.9. I'm Linda Nygaard, your host, and I'm here with...
Susan McCabe.
Heidi Skrypek. Hello.
Hello, hello. Well, welcome to the Clatch. We hope you can pull up a chair and have a visit with us. We are, we pride ourselves on saying things that people often only think. No topic is off limits, and we'll just have to see what's going to happen today.
Just you wait.
We never
yeah,
know.
You never know. Yeah. If I were you, I'd stay tuned till the end of the hour.
Oh, yeah.
So we like to start out with sort of a little review of how we're doing in COVID, which is getting so much better for all of us. I think I've had both my shots.
One shot. One to go.
I'm a twofer.
You're a twofer.
Hey.
Good, Susan. That's good. So anything on y'all's agenda with regard to COVID news or?
I traveled. I took my first flight.
How was that?
It was pretty good. It was an Alaska Air flight. I sat in seat 1D, which is I was the jump seat. I was not messing around. I was like, I'm going to get in, mask up, and get off.
And get off,
as soon as possible. It was well done. It was really well executed, not too crowded. It was more crowded than I thought it would be. They said, this is going to be a full flight. And I was going, what? A full flight during COVID times? No, it's full flight for what they've scaled it to be.
New definition.
Yeah. Yep. So it was great.
Were there seats open between people?
Not in first class. But on in the main cabin, yes, they kept the middle seats open. So it was great. Well executed. And even where I stayed in La Jolla was a Hyatt hotel, and they were extremely militant about masking up.
Oh, good.
Which in La Jolla, think so much. But yeah, they were really good.
Yeah,
they're very, I don't want to politicize, but yeah. La Jolla's got a certain crowd that... There's a lot of anti-maskers there, but the tourists were really well behaved in the hotel.
Well, that's good.
And you're going to tell us more about your trip in another segment.
What about
of
you?
The show. Things that did well because I'm vaccinated, I feel suddenly free.
Yep.
We actually had friends over for dinner inside the house, and
we
spoke to each other without masks and drank wine and ate food and laughed a lot, and it was wonderful.
And everyone had been vaccinated.
Everyone had been vaccinated, yes.
That's really important, I think, and I love it that we can go do something.
Yep.
But I know that I have to be really careful because I still want to be safe. So I have my package of masks in my car and in my purse, and we still have to wear them.
Oh, yeah, we
but
do.
But it's so nice. I had company for dinner, too.
Yay.
And it's just an amazing experience now that we get to do it again for the first time after so long.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
I think it's kind of ironic that we get to eat indoors now when all winter long we've been sitting outside around the campfires bundled up and having drinks and snacks while we take our masks on and off. And now, as it's warming up, we get to go indoors.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we were going to talk about some...
Yeah.
Some the current goings on.
The kids at Vashon High School's Riptide, which is their newspaper, these kids are budding journalists.
Oh, they're amazing.
Doing a great job. Mm-hmm. And Hallie Wyatt and Savannah Butcher did a three-part series on what they're calling a mental health crisis during online instruction among Vashon High School students. And it's a really impressive piece of reporting. I recommend you're going to the riptide.vashonsd.org and reading all three parts. Can I give you a conclusion? Basically, they're saying the kids are not all right.
Well, there's they sent out an anonymous survey to the high school students. And out of 117 responses, 60.6% stated that they were struggling more than usual or extremely struggling with online learning. And 83.1% of the respondents said they were struggling with their mental health.
Wow.
And so only 9% said they weren't struggling at all. And I think that's something we all need to be aware of. You know, our kids have been sequestered a long time, and I don't know what I would have done at 17 years old when you can't see your friends and do things. I don't know. So I admire the writing that's in this Riptide. This is one heck of a writer, Miss Hallie Wyatt. She's going places. Watch her.
Go, Hallie.
Yeah. So
I would be curious if they did that survey when classes were in person about how many students are struggling with their mental health, because this 17-year-old was definitely struggling with her mental health and had regular school.
And had no COVID.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, too.
It may be a natural state for adolescence.
True.
Period.
Yeah.
Mental health.
Yeah.
It's the hardest time of your life. And there was a time, I think, when there was some false idea that this was the best time of your life. But no, folks, it is the hardest
time of
life.
It is such a hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So, you know, I watched a movie over, I don't know, last week or so called News of the World.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
with Tom Hanks. It's a really good movie. And say what you will about Tom Hanks. Somebody the other day said, I don't think I can sit through another Tom Hanks movie.
Really?
And I thought, why? But anyway, this movie is really, really good. And this is Tom Hanks plays an older gentleman right after the Civil War in Texas. And he finds a little girl. It's a long story, but he takes this little girl home. And it's the story of their journey through Texas in a buckboard wagon. And he makes his living by reporting the news. He gathers newspapers from all over, and then he goes to a little town, charges people 10 cents, and they come in and hear the news from all over. And it's really fun. Well, that's kind of what I do, I think.
Yes, you're the human clipper. I remember my grandma used to send me clips in the mail. That's you, but you do it verbally, probably.
I do it verbally, and I don't send clips to people, but I send them a lot of emails or links or things. You need to read this, you have to do that, look at this, look what I learned, you
know? That's the new clipping, right?
So then that's the new clipping. So then I thought, oh my gosh, this is an old profession.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Not the oldest.
It's not the oldest.
Jinx, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Well, so questions about COVID. One little backtracking. I read an article about people who were 70 plus, older people, and what have they learned? It was written by Martha McClellan, who's a developmental educator. And just some of the things that the older people said. One is, do things now. We just don't know what the future or even tomorrow will bring. One said, I have learned to see my kids in a different light. Their strengths, creativity, and tenacity in working, having kids at home, and deciding the complicated school issues. Gratitude practice has helped me combat judgment. I'm not as good a sport as I thought.
Ah,
I really thought, I know, I get that. And I'm more able to laugh at myself, which I think is really healthy.
Yeah,
we need to do that more. And then I loved this one. The only solace is in the moment, which is fresh with every breath.
That's beautiful.
Oh, that's perfect.
So I was thinking, you know, this is 70 years and older, but it applies to everybody, really.
Yeah, it doesn't 100%. Sound age appropriate or inappropriate to me at all.
At all. Yeah. Anyway.
Those are great.
So, and, you know, my own personal COVID stuff is that I just have been grateful that I've been able to keep in touch with the people that I love. And now I'm going to get to see them in person.
Yeah.
So that's going to be really fun.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Going down to San Diego, I also got to see my father. We had brunch outdoors.
Oh, nice.
They're in Purple Phase in San Diego County, which is outdoor dining only.
Oh.
Yeah. But it was lovely. He's vaccinated. Nice. So we sat next to each other.
How nice.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, Dad.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I bet it was. I bet it was. Yay. Well, so March.
How
Women's History Month.
Yeah.
Think about that. Here we are. I have a history.
Oh.
And I'm a woman.
So it's your month.
Could be. I'll tell you later.
Can I play a song?
Oh, sure. Please.
This is Queen Latifah, Ladies First. It came out in 1989. And just a snippet. Here it is.
Okay.
Yeah, there's gonna be some changes made here.
Who said that the
you don't believe, well, here, listen to this rhyme. Ladies first, take your time to rehearse. I'm divine and my mind expands throughout the universe. A female rapper with a message.
She is, in the video, she's dressed in African garb like an African queen. She's alongside Moni Love. This is around 1989. It's amazing. Afrika Mbata, Coolio, Queen Latifah, all these guys were part of the Tommy Boy Records crew. And she's this amazing 6 foot tall goddess, African American goddess. And she's also the equalizer on some new show on.
She is?
Yeah, she's the equalizer. She was a rapper to start. So anyway, I just thought I'd
share
that little tidbit. Isn't that cool? Mm-hmm.
But that was very cool.
Ladies first.
In 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
So it's.
When fat was spelled with a PH.
That's right.
And people wore cross colors.
Yeah.
Totally, totally.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to talk about with women's history. What do you want to do? How do you want to talk about it?
Well, I think, Heidi, you've got some swimmers.
So, okay. The other part of the San Diego trip. The San Diego trip keeps coming up in my conversation because I'm fresh off of San Diego. I did an English Channel relay qualifier. So swimming is definitely on my brain. And this is one sport where women have actually surpassed the men. Open water swimming, I will say.
Is that because we have more fat and we float better?
Probably. It probably boils down to something that.
Of course.
And mental fortitude.
It's the boobs.
It's the boobs and the butt and the will to persevere. Seriously. Mm-hmm. So I just want to call out a few very awesome history-breaking female swimmers, women swimmers. 1926, here locally, Alexina Slater swam from Vashon to Point Defiance.
When was that?
1926.
Wow.
And that's a two-mile swim. I have done it. It is hard. Those currents are strong. She took fourth overall, and she was the...
Wow.
Yeah, so she broke history locally. Stadium High School, go, go. And then at the same time, Gertrude Ederle, on August 6, 1926, as part of the Women's Swimming Association that had recently formed, she was the first woman to cross the English Channel in 14 hours, 34 minutes, smashing all the men that had tried it, five of them that preceded her. She shamed them.
14 hours to cross the whole English Channel?
That's a good time. That's a good time. It took our relay 17 hours the last time we did it.
Wow. Take me longer than that in a boat.
Right? And she was welcomed home. Gertrude was welcomed home to a ticker tape parade in Manhattan of 2 million people. Those are two. And then Alison Streeter, fabulous swimmer out of the UK, has swum the English Channel 43 different times. She's done a three-way. She was the first person to do a three-way. That means, hi, sorry, let me clarify.
Wrong Susan's, segment.
Susan's yeah. eyes are rolling back into her.
Furrowed brow here.
Get your mind out of the gutter. That's not for another 40 minutes.
Right. I'm building.
Okay. Alison Streeter did a three-way crossing of the English Channel, one consecutive swim. So there, let me.
So she crossed it three times.
Yes. Three-way.
You mean in what? In one swim?
In a single swim.
Holy cow.
And then...
How many hours was that?
I don't think I have the time written down, but I can look it up.
Okay.
But she did that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. And then not in the open water, I want to talk about Simone Manuel, African-American. She's the first African-American to win a gold in an individual swimming event, 2016 at Rio. She actually scored 2 gold medals and 2 silver. And I just love... to see diversity, because it wasn't that long ago, you guys, swimming pools in America, people were chasing them out with acid and horrible, horrible things.
Terrible things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for me, one of my goals is to get certified to adult learn to swim and teach people of all colors and shapes and sizes how to swim.
Everyone needs to know how to swim.
Lastly, I would like to give a shout out to my friend in Colorado, Sarah Thomas, who swam 4 consecutive crossings of the English Channel in 54 hours. She did this after the year prior just finishing chemo and having a mastectomy for breast cancer.
Man.
There will be a movie called The Other Side. It's in post-production right now.
Wow.
I invested in it. There was a big crowdfund before she even started the swim. They basically, she kind of hid it from everybody. And then she announced it and said, we're going to tape this as we go and we're going to document this. So if you want to be a part of it, donate. I was all in and I'm so excited to see the final outcome. But
do they have a timeline yet for post-production?
It should be out by the end of the year. So wow. The other side, just look for the other side. And it is grueling. When she got out of the water on that 54-hour swim, she was completely, her face was completely bloated. Like imagine a puffy, one of those squeezy stress dolls where the eyes pop out. That's what her eyes looked like when she took her goggles off. Her lips were completely swollen. Her tongue was so swollen she couldn't speak. Her throat was totally scratchy with it was swollen from the salt. Crystals that form on the sides of your tongue and the back of your tongue, it's called salt tongue. It's a thing when you swim the English Channel. I have done this in just a short sliver of a relay, and it even in that short of time, you get this horrible rotten mouth thing. You chafe very badly, even after a few hours, in your swimsuit seams around your boobs and your butt and your shoulders. You can chafe terribly if you don't grease up. In the old days, it used to be like lanolin or some kind of fat from an animal.
Lard,
yeah. And then these days, it's a mix of Vaseline and Desitin baby diaper ointment.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and she was covered in that stuff, like totally ghost white. And you put it on super thick under your arms. Like you pretty much swoop your three fingers through a Vaseline container and just go for it. And I greased somebody up at Catalina who was doing a solo crossing. And she kept saying, more, more, more. And I was going, oh my God, are you sure? You know? And she just said, give me the thing. And she took it. She just totally swept the whole inside of the Vaseline and just did everything. And it was so disgusting, but I got it. And when she got out of the water 11 hours later, Melanie, it was all gone, but she didn't chafe.
Wow.
It worked.
It worked.
Wow.
Yeah. So those are some
hazards.
Wow,
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does not make long distance open water swimming really attractive.
And the jellyfish. I didn't tell you about the jellyfish.
Oh, tell us about the jellyfish.
The English Channel especially has these compass jellyfish, and it is like a minefield when you're crossing, and there's so much swell in the middle of the deep water. You don't see them coming until it's already like right in front of you. So you feel like you're playing a game of asteroids in the water. You're like, just kind of dodging them as you go. It's real. It's real. So it's an adventure.
So why do people like you do this?
The challenge. This is just, I don't know. I don't do it like these guys do it. Not even close. I like it. I like it. I like the challenge. I like the endurance of it. I don't know. I never thought I would be that person. My friend wanted to cross Alcatraz one day and I was like, I would never do that. And then it came down to it and she was scared and she needed a security person and she asked me to do it and I did it. And then I did it five more times.
Well, good.
So I don't know. There's something about it. It gets addictive.
Well, it's part of your life now for you.
Yeah, it is.
It's totally a way of life for you.
Totally. Yeah. It's a good group of people and the world is small.
Yeah.
So.
And women have excelled.
Women have.
And especially in that sport, they really have. And they continue to do new and exciting feats. And I just want to get through a marathon swim, which is, you know, in excess of 10 kilometers or more in open water, following the channel rules, which mean no wetsuit, just a cap, goggles, and a swimsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll report on that as it happens.
Yes, that'll be fun.
I think we should go out there with a tape recorder.
We should.
Yeah.
Be fun.
A recording device.
Totally.
And talk to you through this process.
That'd be fun. We could be in a kayak.
Yeah.
Oh, and she can swim.
For that distance, we'll be in a motorboat. I'm sorry.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about that distance. I was thinking about rolling. In general.
Yeah. Yeah. How many miles?
Yeah, I'm going to do a 12-mile one around Coronado Island on the first week of June.
June, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, my women's history thing is a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about beer.
Cool.
Did you know that the original brewers were women for beer?
No. And I heard about whiskey.
No, beer. Well, maybe so.
Yeah,
But beer for sure.
Cool.
Up until the 1500s, it was primarily women's work. It's what they did.
Wow.
They had, when the brew was ready, they'd put a little white flag outside their door, and that meant somebody could stop by and get a pint. Way back when, you know, you can figure cobblestones and dirty and ick and cauldrons.
Nobody washed their hair.
I know. But anyway, then it started to be a smear campaign with the women who were brewing because the men didn't like it that women were getting the notoriety. So these women, if you look back at history and look at their sketches and drawings of them, they have pointy hats on and they have a big cauldron and they're stirring with big sticks and big spoons. And uh-huh. So from that emerged the connection with witches.
Uh-huh.
And about the time that in the Middle Ages that the Inquisition began, mm-hmm. that's when the women brewers were no more. And it's not really followed anymore. In America, you know, most brewers are men.
Today in one of my trade magazines that I have to read for booze, mm-hmm. it's not just that it's predominantly men, it's predominantly white men.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I should have said that. Yeah. But the thing is, people have been drinking beer for almost 7,000 years. And the very first beer recipe comes from 3100 BCE.
What?
And this, I'm telling you. There's a woman, there was a Ninkasi is her name. She is the Egyptian goddess of beer.
The Egyptian goddess of
yes.
beer, I love that.
And, you know, back then most people were illiterate, so there wasn't a written recipe. This is Sumeria. This
yeah.
is when, you know, in that age. So there was a hymn written to Ninkasi, and it's called the Hymn to Ninkasi. And I'd read it to you, but it's really, really long. And what it is a recipe. But because the laborers that were doing the beer and cutting things and chopping things and stirring things and delivering were illiterate, they couldn't read, so they learned the song. And mm. the song is the recipe, which I love that. And that was written about 1,000 years after the technique. So
did they make this beer from honey? Honey made mead.
Well, they started
right.
with right. mead.
Fall
okay.
into the
right.
same category?
They started with mead.
Okay. That makes sense.
And then it was fermenting. You know, they just, something fermented. I don't know how it was invented. I don't know that part.
Most of these things are by accident.
Yeah. 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 And yeah, here's what, to what you were saying earlier, Heidi, the top 10 beer makers in the world are run by.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, eh. Yeah. And it seems to persist in small craft breweries as well. A study at Stanford found that 17% of craft breweries have one female CEO. What? 17% of craft breweries have one female CEO. Only 4% of these businesses employ a female brewmaster. And I met Oregon's first female brewmaster in Eugene, Oregon. Her name was Terry Farndorf, and I will never forget her because she was an engineer and was inventing Microsoft, that kind of stuff, and
wow.
was inventing all kinds of things, and all she ever wanted to do was make beer. And she talked about when she was a little girl, her dad was making bread, and she started experimenting with yeast. And she made beer accidentally when she was a little girl. There were ingredients around, and she just, you know. So I went and visited with her, and it was really wonderful. She's the first woman master brewer in Oregon, and it might be in the United States, but I don't know that for sure.
That is cool.
That
I know.
Is very cool.
I loved it. And then, you know, women in the restaurant industry, I just have a couple things I want to bring to the table. In 1945, and forgive me, I'm going to really chew on this pronunciation, Bu Wei Yang Chao.
Could fool me.
Yeah, we can thank her. For okay. the term stir fry and pot stickers.
I love it.
She coined coined those phrases in her 1945 cookbook called How to Cook and Eat in Chinese. And it was not just a place for recipes, but it was also stories and it was culture and it was that kind of thing. So she, you know, she invented the word stir fry when she was trying to teach Americans how to do the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in 1965, do you know who Ruth Fertel is?
No.
She was a single mom, 1965, teaching herself how to survive. She had kids. And she decided that she was going to open a steakhouse. She always wanted to have a... It's Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Oh, I'll be darned.
1965.
That's
and
cool. Wow, she did well with that.
Well, her legacy lives on. Her kids did well, that's for sure.
Definitely.
And then the other woman that I really want to talk about is Edna Lewis. And I don't know if you know her or not, but she was a black female chef. She was the first one to receive the James Beard Living Legend Award.
Whoa. First one ever, not the first black woman, not the first woman, the first one ever?
I think so. She inaugurated that award.
That's incredible.
I know. And she was born in a family of emaciated slave. Emaciated.
Emancipated?
I suppose they were emaciated,
they
too.
They could have been that, too.
Emancipated. Sorry. I'm a little off my game today. And then she wrote and published an instrumental Southern cookbook, The Taste of Country Cooking.
Oh, very cool.
And she's just well-renowned in the world of cooking, and I just...
That's a good
Edna
one.
Lewis. Yeah. And if you look up her name, you'll just find so many wonderful stories about her and her philanthropy and the way she took care of children. And she was pretty wonderful. So
sounds aces.
Women in Food and Beer was sort of my contribution today.
I would like to take just a quick second here. We need to say thank you to our underwriters.
Thank you.
This portion of VOV programming comes to you with support from Vachon Center for the Arts. VCA provides quality arts experiences for all ages and creates opportunities for artists to perform and exhibit their work. Find out what's happening at VachonCenterForTheArts.org.
Voice of Vachon thanks Dental Care of Vachon for its programming support. If you have tooth or gum discomfort, damaged or missing teeth, sleep issues, or need crowns or dental implants, Dr. Demova and her team will bring you relief in a comfortable, caring environment. Call them at 206-457-2744 and find them on the web at dentalcareofvachon.com.
Thank you, underwriters. Okay.
Woo-hoo. All right. We're back. Thank you. And now, you're listening to The Clatch, by the way, 101.9, Voice of Vachon. Susan, we're talking about women's history. And well, Susan had a couple of observations.
Yeah, just a couple. Well, yeah, I was thinking about women in history and women who are kind of living contemporary history. Mm-hmm. And that brought me to two recent movies. One of them is about a woman definitely in history, and that is United States versus Billie Holiday. I don't know if any of you have seen
it.
Haven't
yet.
So good.
It's a remarkable film. The Golden Globe Awards showered praise all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Andra Day, who plays Holiday in the film, is remarkable. She literally, in an interview with Oprah Winfrey, said that she was basically channeling.
Oh yeah,
Billie Holiday. She felt Holiday's spirit with her. And when Linda and I were talking earlier about that notion of the spirit,
the presence,
yeah. Yes, in being there in the making of a film, my first reporter's reaction was, okay, I'm not too sure about that. But my woman's reaction is, yeah.
Yes.
Spirit, intuition, mm-hmm. those things that are attributed to the feminine and that have been denigrated as not logical are valid and real, and they contribute particularly to art, but also to science. And
leadership.
To research and leadership.
Leadership, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. A person with intuition is going to be a good leader. You're absolutely right. So that film was about the persecution, essentially, of Billie Holiday by the FBI and the narcotics division of the FBI.
They were just out to get her, no matter what she did. Yeah.
Because she kept singing the song Strange Fruit.
And yes. The Strange Fruit. I'd never heard that song.
That's you serious?
I'm serious. Well, I had never heard that song.
For anyone out there who doesn't know, the song Strange Fruit is about lynchings in the South,
mm-hmm.
and refers to the black bodies hanging from the trees. It's a very painful
song. It's a painful song.
But she kept singing it as...
she had a cease and desist order.
Oh, she had that.
And
she was arrested several times for singing that song,
mm-hmm.
because she violated the cease and desist, mm-hmm. order. And she stopped for a little while. But according to the film, when she was on tour and this FBI agent who was undercover with the tour was with her, and they were getting close as individuals, they stopped. They made a pit stop with the bus. And they were in the South, and they came upon a family where the mother had just been lynched, by the Ku Klux Klan. The father was hanging onto her dead body. The children were hysterical and the house was burning. This scene is very difficult to watch. She refused after that to stop singing the song under any circumstances and continued to be persecuted by the FBI, dogged by the FBI and the federal government. And ultimately, pushed to the point, she was a heroin addict. No one was helping her. Most of the men in her life betrayed her, black and white men. And she died with her ankles chained to the bed because she was under arrest. And she continued to be this icon of art and of civil rights standing.
I mean, she used her art for the civil rights. And you're right, she didn't back down from singing that song. And that is so haunting.
Haunting is the perfect word for it. And that's exactly what it's meant to be. The other movie, which is a little lighter. I'm a little verklempt after
that. A little lighter, not much.
Yeah. Well, it kind of depends on your perspective.
Well, true.
That is Nomadland. Both of these films got Golden Globe Awards this year. Nomadland, Best Picture, was created and directed by Chloe Zhao, who is a Chinese woman.
Yes.
And stars Frances McDormand. And they used real people. And this is about a woman whose husband dies. She loses everything. Not only does her husband die and with him take everything that she had, the town that she lived in, Echo, Nevada, dies.
U.S. Gypsum. It was a drywall manufacturing is what they were known for. And then when that shut, it was over. It was tumbleweeds. And it's not just a desert. It's like brutally cold winters too.
Yes.
Like a tundra. And so off she went into her little tortoise shell.
Her little van.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that she meets along the way are just incredible. I loved the fact that they used real people.
They did.
And the stories that the real people told were amazing. And some of the things that they did and liked to do and had fun doing, you know, it's not all darkness and sorrow. It's about surviving and overcoming.
Well, it's actually a cultural choice for a lot of these folks, a lifestyle choice.
I know.
Modern nomads, who one of the characters in the film compare to pioneers, but they choose to live off the grid. They choose to live without a lot of possessions.
And I forget the name of the place they went in Arizona. Do you remember the name of the
RTR to that? Well, the pilgrimage that they made.
Yeah,
to that one gathering. Yeah,
yeah. There's
it's called RTR, but I can't remember.
What I don't know what.
But there's the name of a town there, and they all go there every winter. And
And they see each other down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But this, to my mind, as far as women's history is concerned, this is the image of women who are overcoming adversity and choosing to live lifestyles that aren't necessarily the American dream. It kind of flies in the face of the American dream. And I found a lot of that attractive. Like, you don't have a big house to take care of. You don't have a big yard to take care of. You're not living for your stuff. You're living for life.
Mm-hmm. It's downsizing at its
extreme,
right?
Downsizing.
Right. And that was another piece of the movie where you saw these folks shed their possessions and everybody kind of had their own little informal swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need this? Yeah. Do you need this? Could you use this? And then others like giving away all their worldly possessions.
Really, in some ways, it's an idyllic exchange of it's what we believe in, sharing and moving around and talking. And
And it really does make you think about that. And also just, I mean, she had in this movie, the protagonist has a choice.
She did have a choice.
She could,
she did.
She could be housed once again or not. And she not is was what she chose. And off she went. And
that was that.
Am I spoiling the end of the movie?
Yeah, you just gave away the end.
But, sorry.
No, you're right. She did have a choice. She had an opportunity to be housed and cared for. By a really nice family.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about this, wondering, do you guys know when Women's History Month was invented or whatever? And why do we have a Women's History Month?
Or day, International Women's Day yesterday, right?
Yeah. You know, because we were talking last week about where did this patriarchy come from? Like, when did that start?
Oh, well, that's different from Women's History Month or Women's
Well, kind History of, except Day. that you're in, we're talking about patriarchy sometimes anyway, and women's history is a way of noticing the women who are doing things. Yeah. We don't have Men's History Month.
No, because it's all men's history.
Right. Okay. You could make the same argument about February and Black History Month.
Exactly. Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I just hope that as we move forward, we just shout out for everybody.
I know. We don't need so much separation.
Well, I think my recollection is that this started somewhere back there with Hillary Clinton and an International Women's Day that she held as either as First Lady or as Secretary of State.
So it's fairly recent.
Very sketchy memory. Yeah, it is fairly recent.
You don't have a sketchy memory.
I have the sketchy memory.
Ooh.
It's a way of honoring and recognizing that, oh yeah, women have had an impact on the development, not just of this country, but of the world. And Black History Month is about, hey, this is the huge contribution that Black people have made to this country. You know, we're learning every day more and more. This country was built on the shoulders of Black people.
I know.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading this book called Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. She's fantastic. She won the Pulitzer. She wrote a book called The Warmth of Other Suns. She is blowing my mind because this book touches on that so strongly. Our forefathers, there's so much we didn't learn in history in school.
I know.
And, you know, yay, we came to America and, you know, goodbye, Europe. We don't want you anymore. And we're going to be independent and we're going to build this empire. Well, that was built on the backs of slaves. Of not just Black slaves, but then think about the railroads. Railroads were built by the Chinese.
Think about the Capitol building and the White House.
Yep. Absolutely.
Built by slaves.
Mm-hmm. So and the playbook for Nazi Germany, they took the Third Reich, the Reichstag, they took the playbook out of the state's rules that were from early on, like West Virginia. And that's how they learned how to create these very organized castes on color, in that case it was Judaism, and because they had an agenda, they wanted to root out these people that they decided to make their scapegoat, and so they used that as a playbook because the United States, it was just barely the United States for 150 years, had this really wonderful way of keeping people in their place, and so they took it to the extermination, you know, zone, and that's how they did it, and it's chilling. This book is chilling. Sorry.
You know, another I'm glad you said that. Yeah. Another woman that we haven't even talked about is Gloria Steinem. And I saw that movie about her the other night called Gloria's. And I didn't realize this about her either, but she, right after college, went to India by herself for 2 years, totally alone. And so they show her on the bus with the Indian people, and she's in a lower caste system.
Yeah.
And that's where she stayed. She didn't want to go in the high caste system. And so she learned what the people really put up with. And that, she says, was the trigger for her to come back to America and talk about women's rights.
Good.
Was from India and the caste system. So I thought, you know, she's another one we have to mention.
Yeah. Would you repeat the name of that movie again?
Which movie?
The one I just talked about? Gloria Steinem.
The Two Glorias.
The Two Glorias.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding. Make a note of it. The Two Glorias.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
And the name of that book,
Cast, C-A-S-T-E, by Isabel Wilkerson. It is it's a heady read. There's a lot of case studies she pulls up. She's highly academic. She was a New York Times reporter. She talks about walking in for an interview, a scheduled interview, and a hurried man rushes through and he said, "I can't talk to you. I have an interview with the New York Times with this beautiful African-American reporter. I'm Isabel Wilkerson," she said.
Oh, my God.
And he says, "Well, do you have any ID to prove it?" She had given away her last business card.
Woo!
And so guess what? He wasn't included. He said, "Yeah, I don't believe you." And he goes, I don't have time for this. I got to go find this reporter. And so the story ran without him. And sent a post clip of it with her business card in a letter. Big middle finger.
Aha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say.
Read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am reading Mediocre.
Oh, cool.
By Igioma Uomi. And it's about, how does she put this? The dangerous legacy of white male supremacy.
Oh, dear.
And one of the mottos that has come out of it is, God, give me the confidence of a mediocre white man.
Wow.
Yeah.
We didn't mean to go on this tangent, but it's
but now I have something to say.
Go, girl.
No.
Can you believe it?
I'm reading My Grandmother's Hands. It is a racialized trauma and the pathway to mending our hearts and bodies. And this book is by, I can't remember her name. Mm. But it is about how racism is in our DNA. And yeah. We absorb it and we've passed it on from transgenerational 100%. Racism. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. It's kind of hard to read. It's kind of an academic book too.
It's
you know?
Okay.
But there are exercises in there that help you understand how you think and why you think the way you think. You might think, well, I'm not a racist.
Yeah.
And then there's some questions in there, you know, that, well, oh, yeah. How do I think about that? You know, so I would advise that book.
And how can I unthink that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. How do I learn to unthink that?
I think as we try to confront our own racism, the best we can do is to acknowledge it and then say, okay, I'm not going to do that again. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, there it is. And her name, the author of My Grandmother's Hands, is Rezma Menachem.
Menachem. Mm-hmm. I just found it myself. Yeah, so I would highly recommend that book.
Sort of a similar theme, I would say.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, right up there with Cast. Yeah, well, there are a lot of new books on the market about racism and the history of racism. And
about time.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. really fascinating, uncomfortable,
yeah,
and absolutely necessary.
I get angry as I'm reading these. I turn the page and I'm incensed every page. I told David, like, oh my gosh. My husband is a card-carrying Chippewa Indian, mm-hmm. and that's also noted in the book, how they just exterminated.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe that. Yeah. So, yeah, I get fired up, and I get angry at our school system, and it's like, why isn't this in the curricula? Why didn't we learn this? To help us understand and have empathy and mm-hmm. get it. Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't fix it till we acknowledge it. We can't.
Yeah.
We can't repair the damage that has been done over centuries until we realize that it's still alive. It's
here
with us.
Years ago, I read Howard Zinn's book, The People's History of the United States. Oh, yeah. And now I'm kind of thinking it's kind of mild compared to what we're reading now. You know, it's just, I mean, it's very good. And again, it's a good primer for what really happened, but it doesn't have the depth and the experience.
It's time to say thank you to some of our fabulous underwriters. Here we go.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Spring Organics. 40-plus years of organic, non-GMO soy foods made daily right here on Vashon. Tours are available. Find them on the web at islandspringorganics.com.
Thank you to Windermere Real Estate, whose support makes our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com.
Yay! Real estate. There's not a lot of inventory right now. So if you're thinking of selling and you live on the island.
Now's a good time.
Do it.
Oh, I have a quick fun fact about the island, by the way. Vaccinations are going really well with our senior population. And
95%.
97.
Oh, 97. See, you can't trust me.
Of 60 plus, your memory is stunted. Kidding. That's awesome. 97%. We're way ahead of the country.
We are. That's 97% of people over 65, right?
60 plus. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess. That's.
What I think it's 65.
I think you're right because mm-hmm. that was the cutoff for the vax.
It's 65.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to breathe around old people.
Well, the old people around here are going to be running around like crazy now. I'm one of them.
Yay.
Yeah.
I know. And you won't have hesitation to go to a restaurant. It's so great.
No, it's just really kind of nice.
It's going to be nice for those people that are open in mm-hmm. stores too. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
Please,
wow.
Sit down and order food.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Come in your wheelchair. We're happy. We'll take you any way we can get you.
So
you know,
yes, friend.
We're making a good segue here.
Are we?
Are we? Yeah. There's a whole lot more to talk about. However, Heidi has a special little quiz. What do we want to call this?
It's a little quiz.
A quiz or a it's a little lesson.
It's a trivia.
A trivia lesson.
Quiz. So we left off last show, talking about shrimping, but it is in the forest.
And what was the other one? Oh, flutter. Fluffers.
Fluffing and shrimping.
And for those who don't know, those are porn terms, like as in pornography terms.
So we thought, you know, since we don't know a lot about it, that it would be interesting to learn some terminology from the pornographic industry.
That's right.
From our knowledgeable friends.
And we rely on Heidi for this.
I had to do some research, and I was praying that I wasn't going to get mousetrapped on my computer. I have malware bites, so there's that. This is basically like putting a condom on your computer.
Yeah,
really.
Right? So what I would like to do is quiz you both. I'll just kind of go. You can jump in, or I might target you.
Okay.
You pick. Okay. It's going to get kind of crazy, you guys. Here's the term, and then Linda, you go. The term is pegging. What is pegging?
Pegging?
P-E-G-G-I-N-G.
Pegging.
Give it a go.
I just think it would be, I don't have a clue. You'd have to peg somebody.
It's when women don a strap, they strap on a dildo, and they penetrate a man through the anal canal.
Oh my God.
That's, wow.
I'm quite serious.
No wonder they shortened that term.
I can't handle this.
We just call it pegging.
Okay.
Oh, here's a fun one. Queening, Susan. What's queening?
Queening. Well, would that be the opposite of pegging? And how would that work?
Queening.
Showing off your queening. Twat.
You're kind of close. Are we allowed to say that? Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we checked.
It's where you sit on a face. Okay.
Are we gaining listeners or losing them?
Yeah, I think we're losing listeners.
What is skiing, Linda? Guess what skiing is. Here, I'm going to do a hand gesture so you know. Skiing. Here's my ski poles.
Oh, no, I can't say that.
Okay. Skiing, would that be one-handed?
It's a double feature.
Oh, God.
Oh, I see. So
it's one girl and two men.
Yeah.
And she's
doing manual stimulation.
You got it. Right.
Ding,
nice,
ding.
Nicely put, doctor.
Thank you.
We have a winner. Okay. Buggery.
Buggery.
That's backdoor material.
There you go.
Exactly what that is. Is an English term for for sex in the anal canal.
Well, because they always say bugger off over there, too.
Oh, that's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Podophilia. Linda. Not pedophilia, but podophilia.
Podiatry. Feet.
Oh, you got it. Foot fetish. Very, very good.
Okay, I'm going to stop that.
Okay, I have one last. There's actually a couple really good ones in here. Susan, what is gonzo porn?
Gonzo porn?
G-O-N-Z-O, yes.
Gonzo porn, is that about marijuana? No, that's ganja.
Ganja porn.
It is when, imagine putting a GoPro helmet cam and going to town with somebody. It's a genre of porn where the actor is actually a camera person also. They put you right in the moment.
I see.
Yes.
Yes. Banger. I guess you do.
What now?
Gonza. So this is porn film.
Oh, it's first person
pornographic.
Porn.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. I love it.
Wait. I missed something. I was back with gonzo.
That's
what it is.
So the genre of porn, gonzo porn, is where
first person
porn. So it's like, imagine virtual.
It's like I put a camera on my head and I'm filming everything I'm doing.
Yeah,
it's in first person.
So you're there's like banger or bangy wearing the camera.
I see, the bangor or the bangy. Okay.
How about last one?
Okay.
What is a Jack Gagger? What does that sound? Or what do you? Oh, shoot.
Gagger?
There's a family.
I don't know. Something that's probably not very tasty.
Yeah. It's a husband that is trying to procure other men. With a fee for entertainings with his wife.
And it's called a what? Say it again.
Jack Gagger.
A Jack Gagger.
Well, that's disgusting.
It's a husband essentially pimping out his wife.
Yeah, pimping his wife.
Right. Yuck. Yeah. So there's either a recession happening or they're just tired in COVID times. You take her. I'm sick of it.
What did you learn in COVID? What are your coping tactics for COVID?
I actually, when I was just becoming active with a very steady boyfriend.
How old were you?
I was 16 when I first started having sex, but I was 17 when I had a steady boyfriend.
Okay.
So, yeah. But the steady boyfriend, we're like, let's shoot a porno. And we were in his parents' house in the living room and we set up a tripod. And they were obviously gone. And this it was not in the state, but it was a very highfalutin military politician person that was the dad and his housewife. LDS mom and
they were gone.
They were gone. I was assured. And the tripod was set up and the camera was set up and we went at it, but apparently feet hit the tripod, dislodged the camera, and the camera was just pointing to our feet.
So you have a whole hour of feet.
It was not that long.
Oh, it wasn't. Oh, darn.
If only. It wasn't that gifted. No, but it was hilarious when we did the playback, and here I was thinking, oh, this is going to be interesting and dirty and voyeuristic. And
really hot.
And it was actually, thank you, God, for divine intervention, because it was like I dodged a bullet.
You wouldn't want that.
It was pre-internet days, but still. Mm-hmm. But
gosh,
still.
I hope you kept it.
But it was just these feet rubbing. It was so funny. And then it was just his feet. And then it was just my feet. And it was both our feet again. And then the feet stopped moving.
And that's the end.
I guess that's podophilia, right?
Podophilia, right.
Thank you very much. And the Oscar goes to.
Are we still on the air?
Yeah, I think we're still on the air.
Totally on the air. Thanks for listening. I mean, I have nothing to lose now.
Yeah, no, there is no privacy.
Well, we could talk about what we're going to do next week. We should. Because it kind of comes along with this.
Yeah, but I didn't get to talk about India's lost vegetables.
We have time. Oh, okay. We still have we've got plenty of time. And I think we should, because food's important.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, in my reading and reporting, I should tell you about this article I found called Cracking the Case of South India's Missing Vegetables.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, I can't say the man's name, but I can say his first name is Akash.
All right.
And he is on a quest to find forgotten South Indian vegetables. And this is a COVID story. Ooh. It happened in March of 2020, and he had just returned from Milan, where he received a master's in food design and innovation.
Very cool.
And then went down back home to India. And he was cleaning his room. And he said, like so many other people, my bedroom became a storage unit for my family. And so he was trying to clean it out so he could have his bedroom back. And he came across his grandmother's copy of a 1951 book by Samethu Parr called Cook and See. And it's a classic text of 20th century vegetarian Indian cooking.
Okay.
350 recipes, beloved recipes for all these names of foods that I don't know. But he couldn't find the vegetables that were listed in there. They don't exist anymore. And so he started to cook and he just thought, I'll just keep cooking and find something. And he couldn't. But as a native Chennai resident and a food professional, he didn't recognize some of the names. There were photographs in there of them and he'd never seen them before. So now he's collaborating with the Center of Genomic Gastronomy.
Yay.
A think tank who uses art and science to promote food justice. And so out of 80 different vegetables called for in the recipes, the team couldn't identify 20 of them.
Oh.
The majority of people had memories of these vegetables. They were nostalgic about them, you know, but they couldn't find them. So he's found some of them. He's found some old seeds, and the Indian farmers are very traditional and they trade their own seeds together. They don't really go out in the world and get their seeds. They trade back and forth. And, now they're finding that some of these threatened varieties have survived in tiny little enclaves around India. Because, you know, in India, I've never been to India. I'd love to go. But apparently there are little pockets of different kinds of cuisines, depending on which part of the country you're in.
Makes sense.
And mm-hmm. the little tiny villages, even where they're Brahmin, some of them eat meat, some of them don't, you know, so you just never know. But now they're on this collection sojourn, and he's working with the organizations to reinstate the heirloom vegetables and find them again for everybody. And he says he has his phone and his internet, et cetera, but the best research he's doing is cooking.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
I just thought it was wonderful.
So he's cooking these lost vegetables.
He's growing them and finding them.
Uh-huh.
You know, he started a year ago, so he found some seeds and he grew some seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And he's working with a seed saving group, which is a network of indigenous chefs, and they're all saving their seeds and their produce. They're growing dozens of rare, hyper local varieties of rice, vegetables, and beans.
This is huge. There's a book from Raj Patel called Stuffed and Starved. It came out in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the industrial food system.
Right.
And the fact that India has, I mean, there's been a lot of really unfair laws that have squeezed out these small subsistence farmers. Entire mm-hmm. varieties mm-hmm. of food, like you're just saying, have been wiped out. Monsanto has rolled in, and, you know, there's these Roundup Ready seeds, and there's seed drift, which then contaminates neighboring crops mm-hmm. of these folks. Mm-hmm. So this is so critically important to have this cultural rebirth in the face of big ag that has completely upended India's agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
well, it has upended families, really. It's up at neighbors and families. And now what they're finding is that the regional availability of ingredients shapes the different castes. And if they don't have the vegetables they need, it's their food traditions. It's their culture.
That's big.
It's a big part of it. Yeah, it's huge.
Has that not also happened in the United States to agriculture?
Oh, yeah.
There are seed savers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Working here, too. And big ag has destroyed small farming and those traditional seeds. Mm-hmm. It's also taken the nutrition out of the soil, which takes the nutrition out of the huge, agribusiness farmed vegetables that we get at the grocery store.
Yeah. And that's all about monoculture, which has totally overtaken so many little farms here and abroad.
And it's overtaken big business too. It is monoculture, and they keep planting the same thing in the same ground, and they don't replenish the soil.
Gee, that's a high note. I'm just kidding. That's a high note, though.
No, okay, but the high note here, the high note in this story is he remembers his grandmother, and he would ask her when he was a little boy, what are you going to do with that? And she would say, well, let's cook and see.
Oh.
And so now he has his grandmother, whose name is Kamala.
No.
Oh.
Her memory with him. And if somebody asks him what he's having for dinner, he says, let's just cook and see.
Oh,
I like that. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Super uplifting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of uplift, we could talk about what we're going to talk about next week.
Oh, yeah, we could.
Yes, we could.
It's a segue.
Yeah.
Such a good segue.
Well, next week we're going to talk about boobs. And our goal is not, it's not X-rated by any stretch.
No, not
any
at all.
Stretch.
This is so tame.
We want to talk
really
about art and history, women's breasts in art, history, culture, that kind of thing. And maybe we'll talk about breast cancer, and maybe we'll talk about how boobs looked in the 50s. Oh,
yeah.
Pointy boobs. I don't know. But that's our topic. And we have next week, someone emailed us. I'm not going to tell you who.
Cool.
Tell the next show 2 weeks from today. And she's going to read something that she's written about breasts that you will love. So
if any of you out there have comments or specificities.
Ooh, that's a big word.
About boobs, please send that suggestion to us at theclatch@voiceofvashon.org.
We want to thank everybody for tuning in today.
Oh, thank you for listening. It's just really been fun.
Hope you were laughing with us.
Love clatching with you. Definitely not at us, especially the feet.
Yeah, no laughing at
the
feet.
Oh, sorry, we're going to laugh at you.
Have a good couple of weeks, everybody, and join us again in 2 weeks.
We'll see you then.